Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum and welcome to the ninth episode of the third season of Sukoon. Sukoon is going through a reimagining into a new series brought to you by Nasimco, where we explore the rich history, challenges, and successes of North American Shia Muslim community. In each episode, we'll sit down with leaders and pioneers who have helped shape our community, contributing to its growth and development over the years. Our guest today is someone whose passion for wellness and community has sparked a real movement within the Khoja world. Today, we welcome Brother Ashiq Ali Thamani from London, UK, a nutritionist and coach, and a driving force behind Thrive, a health transformation program with a team of expert male and female coaches serving clients globally. Thrive has been highly successful in helping reverse type 2 diabetes and PCOS for many clients, and is particularly renowned for supporting South Asian women through pre- and post-menopause by combining cultural understanding with expertise in fitness, nutrition, and mindset. We're so excited to welcome him and hear more about his journey, the story behind Thrive, and how he's helping others find wellness through faith and community. Please join me in welcoming our guest, Brother Ashiq Ali. Salam, Brother Ashiq Ali, and thank you for joining us today.
Alaykum salam. Absolute pleasure. Thank you.
So to start off, could you tell us a little bit about yourself, where you were born, raised, and what did you study?
Sure. So I'm Ashiq Ali Damani. I am in my 40s. I was born in East London, moved to West London in the 90s, and have been a Hujjat Stanmore member ever since. I studied information systems and AI at Derby University, and I worked in the IT industry actually for 21 years as a technical consultant. And then I underwent some huge shifts in my life, I should say, and did a diploma in nutrition and well-being. And now, instead of designing infrastructure in the cloud, me and my team now coach clients to transform their health and physique forever.
Yeah. So that's a big leap of faith to go from like a regular paycheck and stability to take this leap of faith. What made you say, I need to do this? I need to help my community. And what made you interested in this healthcare and fitness? If you could talk about that, because I'm sure there are a lot of listeners who say, I'm in this 9 to 5. I really don't like it. I studied it, I invested in it through my education, but this isn't my passion. Could you talk about what made you take that leap of faith?
Yeah, for sure. It's a very common question I get. And genuinely, it's not from a place where I disliked IT. I still do a lot of IT, actually. But what happened is that through having a very sedentary job and actually going through a lot of struggles myself, that this switch happened. Okay. So switching from an IT job and now helping people to lose weight and get healthy and get strong, how did that happen? It's a very, very common question I get. But as with many stories, there's always pivotal moments in life. So mine came from a windy Saturday afternoon pre-pandemic when I was in London, and I collapsed from exhaustion after doing a grueling 5 kilometer event run. And I just knew at that point that like I'd hit rock bottom. I was convinced that, you know, I could outrun a bad diet. I used to be a keen runner when I was younger as well. It's like, I've got this. But that all kind of changes after a certain age. And I knew I couldn't run it off. I knew it wasn't working anymore. And I knew the main factor, the main thing that needed to change was nutrition. Okay, that was the realization. So my own transformation comes from a genuine place of pain, actually, frustration, and like that kind of massive realization that something had to drastically change. And it was something that I was putting off for a long time mentally as well. You know how you kind of have this blocker and you kind of do denial, right? But I knew from that point on, after I studied what I did and went into the depth of this, that's when everything changed. So it's going into the deep knowledge of what nutrition is that I was able to start fixing these issues that I was experiencing. So, of course, massive weight gain, big belly, getting tired all the time, brain fog, running performance was really poor, digestion was shot. My migraines used to be so bad. We're not just talking about pain in a certain area of the head. We're talking about full blackout. Very
Wow.
scary.
Yeah.
Patience was poor, fitness was really bad, and I was getting ill very
Yeah.
often as well. So the list goes on, but all through finally understanding food, no, I actually want to call it proper nutrition, that this is when things started to change. Because when I looked into it, and I'm sure you can resonate with this and all the listeners can as well, right? When you look at what the mainstream are saying, they will talk about balance, they will talk about moderation. And it's not that they're incorrect, okay? The
Yeah.
issue is that I think culturally, from our community, we actually don't even know what that means when we say balance and moderation, and we don't really get it. And when we look at social media, they will harp on about the same thing, which is, oh, just get into a calorie deficit and you'll be fine. But when I did the research, not just from an academic point of view, not just from secular point of view, if you look at what the Quran was saying as well about food and the hadith and the narrations, it became very, very interesting. Okay. If you'll allow me, can I quote a few?
Yes,
Yeah,
please.
so
Yeah.
in the Quran, yes, it talks about the emphasis of wholesome foods and avoiding excess. But for example, Surah Baqarah, verse 172. Oh, you who believe, eat of the good things that we have provided you with, and give thanks to Allah if it is Him that you worship. Surah Maida, verse 88, and eat of the lawful good things that Allah has given you, and be careful to your duty to Allah in whom you believe. So, really, my basis of making this transition and transformation was coming from a point where I just couldn't bring myself to believe this kind of mainstream narrative. Rather, I was looking more into how are our Nabis actually approaching nutrition and lifestyle? How are our Imams doing the same thing? And when you look at it from this perspective and you realize that there is magic in food, there is medicine in this, in the way that Allah has provided us food. From that perspective, then I started to say, actually, you know what? Treat your food as medicine before medicine becomes your food. You see? And then
Yeah.
also, I say this a lot in my courses as well. I say, if it's plucked from a tree or it grows from the ground and it doesn't have a label on it, it's probably very good for you. But why?
Yeah.
Like, where does this confidence come from of understanding all of this? It's because Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has made these types of food available to us. And if we look into the narrations that are there, the scriptures that are there, we will see actually that many of the answers have been there all along. It's about time we got together, we researched, we studied, we reflect, and then we implement these things. And I think that then became the difference.
Yeah, that's beautiful how you tied in everything from the Quran and the Hadith into wellness. And unfortunately, it took you collapsing to have to recognize that.
Yeah.
So, how did you go from that to starting Thrive? And could you tell us a little bit about the company?
Yeah, for sure. So, as I said, these kind of these issues that I was experiencing and I finally overcame, be it energy levels, immunity, shedding the excess body fat. As I was doing it, people around me were noticing, right? So,
Yeah.
and because I was tracking all of these metrics, I was able to see, like, okay, what's actually happening? So, body fat percentage managed to bring it down to 10%. My 5K running record went from 33 minutes down to 20 minutes. I managed to complete a marathon just over 4 hours. I'm saying all of this because I want to emphasize none of this was in my wildest dreams
Yeah.
until I addressed nutrition and lifestyle. Okay. So,
Yeah.
as and when this was happening, I started to get approached by people. They were saying, oh, we want to do the same thing. So, of course, it starts with like family members, friends, and then it kind of grew from there. But they were asking, okay, how did you get these results? And actually, and I still say this to members that join us, that we can transform you through knowledge. And they think I'm mad when I say that. But by giving people
Yeah.
the right knowledge, guidance, and above all else, accountability, this is when you start to see their results really accelerate. Okay. So,
Yeah.
yes, people were coming to me primarily to do what? They were like, oh, can you help us lose a few kilos? We want to feel healthy
Yeah.
again. But as and when I was doing that, what transpired became very interesting and very special. Because yes, people were losing the weight, including my own mother. I started with my mother-in-law, actually. Okay, and then it went to my brother-in-laws and friends and family and what have you. But as they started to lose the weight, and okay, they were changing their wardrobes and what have you, but they started to heal themselves. So I'll give you some examples, okay? Acne, many other skin issues were starting to disappear. I had ladies on the program telling me that my eyebrow hair is growing back. What is it that you're teaching us? Yeah, but like clients bursting with energy. And then as we went more into the detail of like, this is how we should apply it into our lifestyle, and this is what we should be doing with our macro and micronutrients, those members that came to us to try and combat type 2 diabetes sent it into full reversal, to the point where I was getting phone calls from doctors saying, "What is it that you're teaching on the program? I don't even need to give my patient metformin anymore." Ladies were coming forward saying, PCOS is not lo is no longer an issue, or my monthly cycles have become regulated. And of course, we all know what that leads to, right? When they have cycles that are regulated and predictable, we started to have couples that were conceiving as well. So not only were we changing lives, we were actually making them as well. All right. But above all else, now when as people are getting smarter with this, what they're doing is they're having a look at their blood markers. So people are doing blood tests and seeing, okay, if we follow the guidance, if we apply it correctly to our lives, we're also seeing that, look, cholesterol is coming down, HbA1c is coming down, all of these blood markers and metrics are going in the right direction. So even for everyone listening, I would highly recommend to please do blood tests often. The other example, if you allow me to explain, is that not just ladies and gents, but particularly elders. Elders were coming back to me saying that we're able to sit on the floor during a mosque program for the entire thing, for the entire program, without having to move, without having to fidget. Now, for me, I didn't think that was a big deal, but it kept happening. The elders were saying, "We feel stronger. We now have 65-year-olds doing pull-ups and push-ups." When I say that, I still find it like unfathomable. But we have the videos. I mean, when you educate people really about proper functional strength, and inshallah we'll talk about it, it's incredible what can happen. And but I think above all else, the stories that really buoyed me the most, the ones that really hit my heart the strongest, were people getting rid of chronic pain. This is a real matter for a lot of people. And the other one is confidence. We don't teach it. Okay, I'd love to be a confidence life coach or whatever. It's not what we do, but off the back of what we teach with regards to lifestyle and nutrition and strength range, etc., people were becoming more confident, to the point where you've probably seen Sheikh Mohammed Al-Hilli's testimonial, and even he mentions about confidence. I was very shocked by that, because I was thinking, this is somebody who travels, speaks publicly, but for the likes of himself and many others, they kept mentioning confidence. And I think it's off the back of feeling and looking better. And it just drives the insides, But above all else, I think it's because we are driven by health first, And we see so many issues, especially amongst the South Asian community. We know that, unfortunately, we're right at the forefront of dealing with heart disease, for example, or as I mentioned, ladies with PCOS, irregular cycles, or even not having a clue what to do when they are approaching menopause or post-menopause as well. So with all of this, it's built up this passion, and it's built up this real importance to especially to empower the ladies in our community, because actually, about 52% of our ladies in our community are actually going to experience PCOS. This is not something to be, hidden under the carpet. We need to be talking about these things. So really, where it started from was pain, and that pain has turned into a purpose. And now I'm not going to stop. I will not stop until I'm 6 foot under. So the I know you called it a company, but for us at Thrive, it's a mission and it's a message they want that we want to take to every community, inshallah.
Yeah. Where do you see this company or your passion going in 5 years, 15 years? Where would you like to see this, and how would you like to see it impacting the communities?
Yeah, sure. At this moment in time, and I know this sounds naive and very non-entrepreneurial, whatever you want to call it, but it's just changing as many lives as possible, really. It's that simple. I can't describe to you that feeling when someone comes back to us with a win, whether it's their children or grandparents saying that they can pick up their grandkids for the first time and play football soccer with them or whatever it is. It's such a huge win that it's like a drug for us, and we don't ever want it to stop. And it's our daily dopamine hit, of knowing that we've made such a big difference to someone's life. And not only that, I guess this one really is nice when we have clients come back saying, you've changed my life, but you have no idea what you've done to my kids. Like, you've never met my kids, but they're eating healthy, they're moving great, their confidence has skyrocketed, and it's changed even the way that we have dinner. Like that. I don't know where we're going to be in 5, 15 years' time, whatever, but I know that we're not going to stop. And above all else, we're going to start with our community first, because I feel we're 5 steps behind. And I do work with a lot of people that drink alcohol, and their journey is far, far more difficult when it comes to transforming their health and physique because of this issue. We don't even drink. And yet we're 5 steps behind. It's high time that we bring these issues to the forefront and really give it our all and change the lives of our community members, inshallah.
So when you say we're 5 steps behind, what do you see are the biggest risks to our community? Do you see it as just lack of awareness, or where do you see are the biggest red flags when you kind of go around and talk to people?
Yeah, I think, it's not even about what I see, because you can notice like who's unhealthy and who's not, even from like skin and iris and all this kind of stuff. But actually, here's the stark reality of it, okay? Heart disease is the number one killer in our community. It is. And as far as South Asians are concerned, we are 5 times more likely to develop heart disease. All right?
And is
And this
that
is
for
all.
men only, or men and women?
Great question. It's men and women, and it comes from this issue of our genetics having the ability, I should call it, to generate more what's called visceral fat, that kind of very unhealthy, like, how should I say, unhealthy and very scary fat that kind of grows around your vital organs. Okay, so it's actually the more important fat that we need to talk about. And so, as South Asians, we have, I think they term it as toffee. I don't know if you've heard this term before, but it's like thin on the outside, but fat on the inside. So, TOFI.
Oh no.
it's a quite a horrible term. But us as South Asians, I know it sounds pretty scary, doesn't it? But basically, what happens is, although we have this kind of skinny fat type of body type, what's actually happening is that because this visceral fat is growing around our vital organs, we are then more susceptible to things like high blood pressure, stroke, type 2 diabetes, etc. All of these issues, which are linked to something called insulin resistance as well. Okay. But with all of this, as we build up that visceral fat around our organs, the responsive mechanism that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has put in our body is that He says, look, if this visceral fat grows too much, then I have to convert it into a less scary fat, which is called subcutaneous. And that fat is kind of just underneath the skin that we can touch and hold and pinch. Yeah. And it grows around our thighs, buttocks, belly, back, arms. And then everyone starts to say, oh, I don't know why I'm putting on weight. It's actually a built-in responsive mechanism that Allah has put there. So I actually tell people, if you have a belly, the first thing you should do is put your hand on your belly and say, Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. And they think I'm joking, but it's actually true. This is, if we didn't have that mechanism and that survival mechanism, if you like, we pr probably would be already dead. Okay, so it's
Yeah.
really a sign, a signal that Allah has put there to say, listen, take action. This is not good. You need to reassess how you're living and eating, and through that, you will be able to make changes. Now, I know this sounds all a bit scary, but I do want to
Yeah.
reassure people listening and yourself and everyone else is that visceral fat reduction is totally possible, but it has to start with nutrition.
Yeah, so it all goes back to what you eat.
It, lifestyle, nutrition, of course, movement,
Yeah.
of course, but
Lifestyle.
a lot, but these are the main factors, of course.
Yeah, so how have you seen diet and exercise change amongst East African Khojas particularly, or South Asians in general? Because our diet, it's not the greatest. I am, my father is Jumbari from Zanzibar, and the fried food, the coconut, I'm just like, how did you sustain yourself just on this? I don't understand. The lack of exercise, I think maybe they walked around a bit more on the island. I don't know, but have you seen it improve, or is it stayed stagnant? Is there more awareness of, okay, in Ramadan, maybe we don't need to have a fried item every iftar?
Yeah, for sure.
Has there been change?
Yeah, I was reflecting on this the other day. When you look back at community pictures or family pictures, or even when you think back of like people in your school class, we struggled to find people who were overweight back then, isn't it? So definitely society, the way the food industry has bombarded us, and the way we're living our lives like more sedentary and going for the quick fixes and the quick bite to eat and eating in the wrong environment, something has definitely changed along the way. So I think you're right by mentioning that did they just move more often? But I have to say that the way we are culturally practicing things and going about our programs or the way we're eating, we have to do a lot of work. We really do. Okay, and many people have tried actually to do this at a macro scale, majalis or changing niyaz, for example, or what have you. And yes, there are elements of that that I think do work. But what I've noticed through the work that we are doing is that I think a bottom-up approach can be very effective, okay? Because through that, you start to build leaders, examples, and mentors off the back of that. I'll give you an example, actually. Recently, we've been doing a bit of touring to share education, for free, for building about awareness. Okay, so actually, we met in Toronto recently for a convention, right? And there, I did a talk at a medical conference as well. But I've been doing similar talks in centres in and around UK. And also, I went to Dar es Salaam recently as well. I'm sure you have lots of connections there. So when I went to Dar es Salaam, I was like, right, first and foremost, I'm going to educate them or build this awareness around how we can make these small shifts and changes. All right. And a very funny example is I went for Jummah Salah one day. And as I entered the mosque and we're about to pray, they were handing a budgiya out to everyone that before they entered, and I was like, this is strange practice. I've heard about samosas and budgies and fried stuff in and around like you were mentioning Maha Ramadan time or maybe like some special occasions for
Juma.
celebration, but a Jummah Salah, everyone has to pick one up before they go in. I was like, we're gonna have to have a real serious talk about this. So I started doing that, and I did a few talks, and especially around empowering the women in our community. I spent a lot of time doing that, but I was drip feeding this. I was advocating people to move, and more importantly, to do strength training. Okay, and so whilst I was there, especially around the elders, I said to them, "Look, after Fajr Salah, for example, you've got this lovely space in the Sahan area. Let's do some strength work. Let's do some exercise." And I think people have had tried similar things before. But I said to them that, look, even as elders, there's so much you can do with resistance bands, for example. So I showed them and we did a session there. And I thought, some people were looking at me really funny and like, who is this crazy guy? from
Yeah.
UK, you know, let us
Yeah.
just enjoy our treats and our savory stuff and our chai and leave us alone. You're making us do
Leave us
exercise during
be.
Fajr. What's this about, right?
Yeah.
So it took a little bit of convincing, but mashallah, they got together. A few of them didn't want to get involved, of course, and I had some funny
Yeah.
looks, but I just continued, all right? But a lot of them got involved and they found it very intriguing. And they were like, oh, I've got a frozen shoulder. I've had a knee replacement. Can I do this too? I said, absolutely. Let me show you. And it starts with very basic exercises. But with those resistance bands, it's given them a new lease of life. They are
Yeah.
not only, I've left, I don't live in Dar es Salaam. I've come back. And what have I found out? That these guys not only continued it, I think two, three times a week after Fajr, they have got this program running now, and they're doing wonderful, wonderful work now to encourage as many people as possible to do strength training. And I'm sure the message is being disseminated amongst the community. And inshallah, I'm going to go back and we're going to keep pushing this message. Why not? Because,
Yeah.
as I said, with nutrition and movement and strength, this is about longevity.
Yeah. So maybe small changes. Maybe keep the bhajia, but add the strength training. Don't make too many changes all at once in the
Yes,
Dar
exactly. Yes.
community.
One thing at a time for sure.
Yeah, exactly. Could you talk a little bit about exactly how the program works?
Yeah, sure. So, yeah, you know, people, when people approach like a particular program to lose weight, okay, what they typically kind of think, okay, I know what I need. I need a personal trainer, and then they'll tell me to do, you know, calorie deficit, and maybe they'll give me a meal plan as well. The thing I want to emphasize to people is that, look, whenever you approach something as a diet mentality or something like a temporary program, you're not going to get that consistency and sustainability. So rather than just looking at what people are eating, what we do is we take a very holistic approach. We look at how you're living as well. Okay, I'll tell you why. All right, we get very typical, common questions like, you know, Ashikali, if I have this detox juice, will it work? Or should I have apple cider vinegar before my meal? I heard that's really good. Or how many steps should I do exactly to lose the weight and feel great again? Right. When in actual fact, it's still harping back to this kind of quick fix mentality. Instead, what we need to do is go, look, connect with the experts and connect with the people that have got this experience, because what they will ask you back is, first of all, before you pick a particular food or approach or something that feels like a one size fits all, we need to ask, what's your gender? How old are you? What's your microbiome status? Where's your blood markers with your blood tests? Are you having irregular cycles? Are you before or after menopause? How is your sleep? What about vitamin deficiencies, stress, your lifestyle, your working patterns, injuries, before even we talk about things like strength training? Yeah. Any inflammation in the body? Are you insulin resistant? Are you leptin resistant? The list goes on. But actually, this is what we do first. We have to get the data. So you are asking how it works. It kind of comes in three stages. All right. So the first is gathering data. If anyone was to come to us, we'd say, look, first of all, we need to gather the data about your body composition. It's no point saying, oh, you weigh 100 kilos. That's not enough. We need to look at things like body fat percentage and all the other metrics that go with it. We need to look at like how your health is currently, your lifestyle currently, and actually what you're eating at the moment. So we do nutrition tracking in a very kind of different way. Okay. But as you probably kind of guessed by now, it's very holistic. So if we have you as the subject matter in the middle, we're looking at everything. I know I've mentioned nutrition a lot, but it's all those other aspects around it. So it's things like hydration, fitness, sleep, digestion, your emotional health as well. So we do a lot of work on mindset, but also self-care, stress, even boundaries, for example. You know, if I had the time, I would do a whole course on managing narcissist relationships, or how ladies should be pampering themselves, because it's a very important part of how Allah has designed them. I really wish we could evolve the program or evolve our teachings within our community into these areas, because stress is a massive part of how our makeup is to begin with. So, data is the first step. The second is progression. And this is really where I would say to people, reach out to people that are doing a service like ours. It doesn't have to be through us, but get accountability. I said to you, people think that they're looking for a meal plan or a personal trainer to count their reps. They're not. They're not. They're looking for accountability. They're looking for the expertise, the knowledge, the support, the coaching, but most important, that behavioral change and that mindset shift. Yes. And then once you're in this space, then we can talk about consistency. Yeah. Because even with consistency, for example, once you have that knowledge and you're like, okay, this is what I'm supposed to be doing on a daily basis, consistency is boring. Consistency is boring, but consistency is boring until it becomes beautiful. And so with that, if you have that support structure around you, this is when you'll start to see those results. People always ask me like, oh, how did you do that for that person? It's that persistence of doing things on a daily basis that inshallah it will manifest itself later. Okay. And this is it's so common with our Islamic principles and practices, everything from salah to psalm to charity. What is it? It's that repetition. Repetition. Yeah. And so I often say that first you create a habit, and then your habits will create you. This is the
Wonderful.
really the angle we need to be looking at it. And then stage three is about refinement and longevity, which I've covered quite a bit. But here I want people to know that the journey never ends, actually. Okay, I'll tell you why. Because lifestyle is there, fine, but we're talking about, full prevention in the future. We're talking about functional strength for elders to not just do it for 6 months, but to think for themselves that, look, hey, when I'm 60, 70 years old, how do I protect myself from a bad fall? Okay. Or even how do I become athletically better? Or how do I even aspire to achieving my dreams? Yeah. Like climbing Mount Kilimanjaro or swimming a mile or doing a marathon, whatever it may be. But functional strength has to be number one. None of us are trying to look like bodybuilders. But our elders, they need to be able to pray their salah correctly in all positions, even when they're 90 years old. Why not? Why not? Or even like how I'm sitting at the moment, are we able to stand with one leg and have that balance and stability? This is where we need to be educating people.
That's wonderful. It
Amazing.
sounds like an excellent program. So for those of us who are watching or listening, what if someone is, let's say they're a little bit overweight, but they've been too scared to step on the scale, or perhaps they're not overweight at all and they think they're perfectly healthy and they haven't even bothered to get their blood levels checked because they think they're perfectly healthy, or they're a little bit older, but they are kind of scared of a fall, but all these three types have no clue where to start. They don't know much about what you've said. They're too, it's overwhelming, it's daunting to get started. What is that first step you would advise someone to take? Just that first baby step to get started on this journey of wellness.
Yeah, for sure. I would start with reflection and reflecting on really what are your pain points and what are your whys. And this can go all the way up to later age. What are you trying to achieve? Is it actually, I want to walk without that Zimmer frame. I want to be able to go to mosque independently, pray in all, pray properly and come back and still drive in my car independently. Or is it a case of, look, I feel relatively fit, but I'm now in my 30s and 40s and I'm feeling like the weight's coming on. Maybe I should take some action. But it is about finding that pain point. As I mentioned to you earlier, my journey started from there as well, right? A sense of frustration of all things that I wanted to achieve. But one thing for sure, Sister Farhana, I don't accept from people, yeah, is this thing, which is, oh, I'm too old now, I'm past it. Because we are seeing it every day with the elders that we are working with. They never thought in their wildest dreams that they would be able to do a pull-up or a push-up or have their kids on their back and do a push-up and stuff like that. It's,
Wow.
you know, it's incredible, honestly, that these
Yeah.
dreams, even in a later age, is possible. So find your why, okay? The second thing is there has to be a moment of accepting that a new lifestyle or a new way of living is required. It is, okay? And again, I'm going to say this is no temporary diets or no temporary program or anything. No, you have to make sure that what you adopt is now for the long term, okay? And finally, I would say that if you are finding it daunting, reach out to those people that can support you in a very empathetic way, to people that understand your culture, people that understand where you are currently and where you're trying to get to that next step, next step. And I'll mention this, you know, many people talk about motivation, and I thought you were going to say the word just then, you know, like, how can we get motivated? Even if you get motivated at the start, you know, and you speak to people and
My
you,
motivation dies.
oh,
Like,
yeah,
I my
exactly.
motivation is up here, and then it goes.
Yeah. And you know, the truth of the matter, motivation will fade. You just said it, that it, you know, it starts high and then it kind of dissipates. Motivation is going to fade. But once it does, that is when the real work starts. Then, because people think they need motivation. Actually, they don't. And you know, I keep hearing about this, it's not motivation, it's discipline. You know, that, I'm sorry, yeah, I'm gonna make a lot of people unhappy when I say this. I find that narrative quite tiring as well. You know, if you go on social media, they're like, oh, you know, don't worry about motivation, it's all about discipline. But I have a slightly different take on this, okay? It's not motivation we need, it's inspiration that we need. Because you can take inspiration from someone else to follow their example, but once you have, you can look inside for that inspiration. And after that, if your intentions are clear, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala will pave the path for you. So really, like, even sister, I'm asking you as well, you know, you're saying you're lacking the motivation. I would say the same thing for yourself. Reflect on what you want to achieve. Look at those that have done it, and then don't rely on this, oh, I need someone to, like, you know, give me a mindset, you know, voice note pump every day to get going. No, inspire yourself to know that actually Allah has still got me in this dunya, in this planet, to fulfill a purpose. Because what is this thing about looking after our bodies and our health? What is it? Surely it's all soul and surely it's all spirit. No, Allah designed us with mind, body, and soul. And with all of this, we know that the vessel that our soul is living in is, in fact, an amana. And with that amana, what should we be using it for? Servitude. Servitude to who? Yourself, your partner, your children, your community members, all of them. This is actually what it is. So once we realize that actually it is, it's true, it is a vehicle, then when you link it to servitude, that's when you don't even need to think about motivation. I have a mission to fulfill. This is where it's coming.
That sounds, it's not just about being motivated that drives you. You can't wait for the motivation to hit you to start
Yes.
moving. So I think one that drives into the next question I think a lot of us face is exhaustion. I think this world, it's just so busy. We are running from one test to the next test to the next test, especially for those of us who are parents. I mean, those of us who are not
Right.
parents as well, but I mean, especially those of us who are parents, we are just going one to the next, and then we rely on sugar to get us just through the next hour. You know, I just need a little bit. I
Yes.
just need a bit. I just want that Cadbury. I just a bit, just to make it through the next one. And then we crash. We crash
Yeah,
out
for sure.
completely. You know, it's such a bad cycle. And then on the weekends, you make up for all the stuff you did on the weekdays. And then the cycle starts on Monday.
Yes,
It's
absolutely.
just the only way to make it through sometimes, but it doesn't seem like the right way to make it through. Can you talk about the tie between sugar and exhaustion and kind of how to break that cycle for us?
Yeah, sure. So again, a very common question that comes to us in terms of cravings or needing that sweet stuff, okay? And again, I play it back to them and I say, well, actually, it depends where it's coming from. I'll give you a small example. Or maybe I'll throw it back as a question, okay? If someone says cravings or even a sweet craving, what is it off the back of? Is it because you are feeling an emotion of stress or anxiety? Is it because you haven't slept well enough to cause our bodies to react in a way that it says, go and find some quick fuel because I'm exhausted? Or is it because you are a lady and you are experiencing a certain phase in the cycle? This is different. And please don't think that men don't have a cycle, by the way. They have a 24-hour testosterone cycle. I don't know if you're aware of that. But even with that, so I come back to the same questions: gender, lifestyle, nutrition, how's your sleep, how's your stress? Now, with all of this, why would I be asking all of these to go through and do this analysis? Because off the back of that, you'll be able to realize that these, when we just apply that vocabulary of a craving, it's actually linked to something far greater. And because we lack that vocabulary, it might be not a craving, it might be the body calling for a particular salt or mineral. It might be the body calling for protein. It might be the body calling for just rest. So, for example, I'm sure you've experienced this as well. When we are actually very consistent with gym and training and workouts and sporting activities, all of a sudden your hunger goes up. Now, that's not a craving. That's the body calling for more protein and fiber and more energetic type food. But the way we have translated it has become very detrimental. Why? Because on one side, we have the food industry, which is like, you're hungry? Why wait? There's a vending machine. Here's quick access. You've got Tim Hortons around the corner. You've got Burger King around the corner. Whatever you need, it's quick food. And then what's happening is we're becoming over dependent on foods and treats like that. And on the other side, you've got the pharmaceutical industry, which are just saying, take this fat jab or, take this medication to control your blood pressure. So we're
GLP-1s,
bombarded from both sides, when really, actually, what it comes back down to is analyzing the lifestyle and implementing nutrition properly. Now, above all of this as well, I do want to mention, okay, that there shouldn't be a life where we don't have things like sweet treats, because who doesn't like cake and ice cream and
I want my
sugary milk?
Cadbury. Yes.
There we go. We all love it, right? But now it's about applying it and implementing it correctly, not according to just a random lifestyle, to our lifestyle, to our culture. You can't have a Qajar cultural wedding without jalebi and cake cutting afterwards, can you? Really?
True.
You
No.
can't. So with that, we need to understand how do we strategize actually to still enjoy it, to still be within what we have been taught within our hadith, and to go with the recommendations, and yet to apply things like fasting with regards to, how we do it in Maha Ramadan and different months as well, and where the mustahab ones are. How do we do it so we are in line with the narrations about not overeating and chewing and following the etiquette of eating, etc.? All of these aspects need to be put together. But when you do, things like cravings and issues related to this and similar, they actually start to go away. And that's when food doesn't work against you. You can work with food to feel vibrant and have your vitality back.
Yeah, that's excellent. So I can still have my Cadbury.
Yes, absolutely. Why not?
That's all the bottom line is. So as we start off with the New Year's resolutions and enter 2026, and I start out with, okay, I want a better wellness journey and I want to be able to run a 5K and I want to shed 5 pounds and all of these goals, how do you recommend someone stick to a wellness routine?
Okay, so
Because I
I
think that
think.
is the most common New Year's resolution that is both written and also lost.
For sure, for sure. Yeah, I often say that when you are starting something new, or undergoing a transformation, it has to fall under four categories, one or more of the four categories, right? You have to either start something, stop something, Do more of something or do less of something? If you know something outside of this realm of transformation, please let me know. But I think it's got to fall under one of these four, okay? But with this, what you need to do is lock on to daily things that you know are going to become an inculcated habit. Because what happens with habits is they become a new standard, and a new standard will become a new identity of yours. I'll give you an example, and I'm just guessing here, okay? I hope I get this right. But Sister Farhana, do you smoke cigarettes?
I do not.
You do not. So you are somebody that will say, "My name is Farhana, I don't smoke." Okay?
Correct.
And somebody will say, "Wow, you said that very confidently." But you say, "But that's my identity. Look how we are Muslims, yeah? It's like I don't eat pork. That's become our identity. That's who we are." Now, this all started with a habit somewhere before in time. And this is what it's got to be. It's got to be well constructed, smart little habits that you build up, and nothing drastic. Nothing drastic, but it starts with, as I said, education, then having that inspiration linked to your why, and then you can go step by step. You know, at this point, I also want to mention, because I know probably some people are thinking, well, I would love to get into the gym and go regularly, but I don't know where to start. And this all, I don't know, have a clue about these machines or I have gym anxiety. It's another common one. Even by sitting here, you and I, we can do calf raises. Yes? Even by sitting here, you can lift up one foot and start revolving your ankle. You know, the ankle, I wish I had time, I would explain to you, right? Just the joints, the joints of your shoulder, your ankle, your knees. You know how complicated they are? You know, the way Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has designed these structures are so, they're so nuanced, they're so special that just by a little movement, we will realize actually how much we will benefit by doing even a little bit of strength training, for example. So even from calf raises to what? To maybe doing stretching to what? To maybe doing yoga, taking a step further, Pilates, a step further, actually going on a little jog or something like that. No one needs to start at 99 out of 100. Let's start at step one. Let's educate people in our community. And I keep saying it, but they hold a special place in my heart, starting with the elders. Because those are the ones that say, I'm past it. No, you can. And if the elders can do it, none of us have an excuse. We are all there with the ability to change.
Very true. Very true. This has been an excellent conversation. I think a lot of people have taken, I hope, a lot of nuggets from it. But I wanted to end with a fun question. What is your
Sure.
least favorite exercise?
Oh, least favorite exercise, I think, would be the sit-up. Yeah. And I don't like it, but also I would say to others as well, don't bother with it, actually, okay? Because it's very linked to the mistake I used to do as well. Because I used to say, you know how I was mentioning earlier, I would outrun a bad diet. Surely, that's possible. But then, a lot of people say, oh, if you do this many sit-ups a day, you will be able to, lean down and get a flat stomach, etc. It does not happen. It has to happen through nutrition. It's like, I'll give the analogy. It's like, when people say, when it's a cloudy day and you're waiting for the sun to come out, what do people say? Oh, the sun has come out. It's factually incorrect. The sun, subhanAllah, is always there. It's just the
It's just a
vision of
cloud.
that sun is clouded by the clouds. So with nutrition and lifestyle and understanding these practices correctly, these clouds are going to go away, and your true self, your true energy, your true confidence, your true body will shine through the way it was supposed to. So, yeah, a bit of a segue from the question that you mentioned to me. Sit-ups, I don't bother. And in fact, I focus more on the things that I mentioned. And inshallah, hopefully, all the listeners will do too as well. But I hope that's been
Amazing.
helpful.
Yes, very helpful. Brother Ashok Ali, thank you so much for sharing your journey with
Thank you.
us. Your dedication to the community and your forward thinking has given us so much hope for the future. You're setting a high standard for all of us to follow. To our listeners, we hope this conversation has provided you with a deeper understanding of the roots of our community here in North America and the hard work that goes into building and sustaining it. At NACIMCA, we are committed to celebrating leaders like Brother Ashok Ali and fostering connections that strengthen our community for generations to come. We invite you to continue this journey with us as we bring you more inspiring stories from across the continent. Thank you for watching, and until next time, Assalamu alaikum.
Thank you.